So, it was like really loud, like maniacal.
Hello, and welcome to episode 118 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, the creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me, as always, are the creator of the epic superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Our very own little Snodsberry, the lovely and wonderful Tony Esmond.
I hope you're including that bit from before we began in the outtakes, where you did an impression of something.
You never know what you're going to hear in the outtakes for this show. Uh-huh. And you, and if, but if
I
you've
don't
been
mind
following
in that guy's laugh.
Oh God! Yeah.
Oh God!
We should have recorded it, shouldn't we?
Do you know what? I'm going to start the show off with that, so that'll be that, and then the theme tune. I think that's too good not to put in, Dan. Your impression was amazing. Yeah. And what's also amazing is this week's guest. Yeah.
Yes.
We're joined by an artist whose work includes titles like The Monkey and the Mouse, Koala Conspiracy. He's got a character called Biggin, which is on the ACP Jam piece, and his new anthology, Stuff and Stuff. He's also put a book out entitled The Making of a Comic-Con, which was a show favourite, and Tony talked about it at length on the show. And that is obviously based on his own experiences being one of the co-organisers of the awesome Nottingham Comic-Con. It's our pleasure to welcome Kev Brett to the Thunderdome. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Kev. Long time coming, mate.
Yeah.
We've been threatening this for years, but now you can't get away.
I really am. You just hear the noise of him hanging up.
Yeah.
Door closing. He was
hanging myself.
Oh dear, it could be an exclusive first of this show.
Yeah.
But I tell you,
snuff podcasts, is that what it is?
The snuff
podcast. Now we're talking. Not a guest.
Yeah. There must be something like that, some show like that, isn't there?
I've probably got close.
Bet you have. Oh dear. Now, before we get stuck in with the comic talk, once again, it's time to thank our friends at Comic House, as always, for helping us keep the show going for free for you lovely people. Comic House is the place where small press creators, they list and sell their books to the masses, and the list is growing every day, and it's brilliant, and it is easy to add your work to their database. As Dan will say, won't you, Dan? You've done it.
Yes, super easy.
There you go.
It's literally like, upload the PDF, some blurb about your comic, the title, and away you go.
Yeah. There easy. You go. You got it from the butcher's mouth, so it's easy.
We're going to do the beta soon, aren't we?
As many have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is yet, Tony?
You were beatering earlier, weren't you, Vince?
Tony, really? What? We're not even five minutes in. So what if I was? No, but
you made me listen.
This is not a joke. It's true.
Shut your mouth. I give you a gift, and this is how you treat me.
Did you just say that's what she said? Oh my God, that's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, it would be the greatest thing ever if it wasn't for Comic House.
Oh my God.
Classic. Yeah, it's a good one, Vince.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah,
genius.
It's cardio work. Yeah, it's cardio. That's what you need to do. Plenty of cardio.
This geek sponsors us. He's got to be sick of me fucking saying rude things in the middle of his.
I know.
Maybe we do love Comic House, though. Yeah. I'd like to say that, yes.
Yeah, Pete from Comic House is a proper good egg. He does love the sponsorship ads, which is crazy because they're the most unprofessional thing on this entire show.
Which is saying something.
Yeah, very much so. But
on a serious note, I can't wait to get the app and give it a trial run.
Yeah.
It's
going to make our job so much easier in finding titles to review.
Oh, completely.
Thank you, Dan.
And all you lovely
people
out
there. Again.
Yeah. Dan's putting it back on track. Amazing. It's going to be easy for you lovely people who want to try independent books and small press books. Check them out. Because with the Comic House app, it's going to be like Netflix for comics. So for just like a low monthly subscription, which is just going to be £3 a month, which is the price of one issue. Not even that sometimes. You can't even get half an issue. of a small press book for £3. And you'll have access to all the titles on there. So check out comichouse.com/app and sign up to the service to get the latest news and more, because it could be big things, I think. I think it's going to be good.
It's going to knock Netflix and chill into the shade with Comic House and chill.
You're
depending
so
on the title you're reading.
You're so hip and trendy, aren't you, Dan?
I don't know.
I watch Netflix, right?
Yeah, there we go.
Who decided that we should call Star Trek Discovery STD?
That's fucking poor. That's really
foul about.
Who's called it that?
Well, he's hashtag STD everywhere. Yeah. And keeps worrying me.
Close confined ship, you know. It's
yeah, must be in the air. I worry just I might get it through the screen like he did in Videodrome.
I can't believe it.
To watch that, but you've kind of seen it already, haven't you, Tony?
Have you enjoyed just like people like having a bit of a shitty argument and not being able to act? You probably quite like
the
it.
Thing
or controversial.
Is, you love being controversial, as your Twitter account will show.
I threw a little hand grenade into my Twitter account today, and nobody replied to it.
I know. Did that upset you?
Yeah.
Such what a time
to talk about, to be fair, tonight, you know, it's anyway. Well,
we do have something to talk about.
We do.
Some things.
Yeah, yeah, because guess what? This week, Kev, what were you doing this weekend?
I've got kids, so
no. Oh, well, say no more. And me, I've got no life, but I had Netflix, so I was all right.
Whereas, you got an STD
now.
STD. I've got STD. Actually, Tony, you're the only one of us that's seen the STD.
Yeah.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm still going with it because I've, you know, spent decades literally of my own life just reading books about Star Trek. And I've watched every episode of movie and cartoon and, you know, I've done it. So I'm giving it a go.
And to be honest, it's only one episode. People need to get a grip. Wait until they
finish. It's the first two, isn't it? And something happens at the end of the first two where everything will shift in the third one. So I'm still going with it. I'm still going.
I'm sorry. It doesn't matter how many times you say Star Trek. That's it. You're reading books about STDs and...
Yeah, that as well. Yeah. Never look them up on the internet because it starts you sleeping. I tell you now.
Yeah. Knowledge is power.
I wouldn't class myself as a Star Trek fan, but like you, Tony, I've watched every single series, some more than once.
Oh, yeah.
Films. To be fair, I haven't read the comics, but... Can't be a good Star Trek film. I would like a Star Trek film to be made that's not about revenge, because that seems to be the hook at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, a baddie comes back for revenge.
Yeah. This is mostly about sort of badly delivered lines.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Tony, with some of the shite that you watch... Yeah. That is harsh, man. That is harsh.
For me, fucking Wrath of Khan is the absolute high point.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Trek.
Yeah.
How dare you? Yeah.
Anyway, back to comics.
Yeah. So while Kev was busy having a family, and I was busy.
Not this weekend. Congratulations, Kev.
Yeah.
You had a busy weekend, my friend. From start to finish, that is good going. Yeah.
Oh god.
But Vince keeps trying to get us to say talk about something. Go with it, Vince.
Because you and Dan went out on Friday, didn't you?
We did. Went out partying.
Yeah.
Go on.
We met up, didn't we? We had a little bromance meet up in Pret-a-Manger.
Oh, you went to the Pret-a-Manger. Oh.
Yeah. We're French.
Just a stone's throw from the shop, isn't it?
Yeah, from Orbital. So then we went to Orbital and we sort of hung about and spoke to people. And I got very excited because I spoke to Shelley Bond, who was super nice. Really nice, actually. And chatted to her about some art projects she's got coming up and some books she's done. And yeah, cracker. Yeah,
it was
really good.
Like entering a tropical climate going into that shop. It was like Jesus H. Corbett. Yeah, it was very warm. Very warm indeed.
And then you had a chat with Chris Thompson from Titan Books, didn't you?
Yes, spent a while talking to him. He had some really interesting insights about just the state of the industry and stuff. And he says Marvel Comics are kind of like a good kind of key indicator to see the rest going. So if Marvel Comics sales start dropping, essentially there's a blowback on the rest of the industry and they start dropping as well.
Okay.
So when the big boy is doing well, the rest of them are, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, oh, interesting. Okay. And we had sort of, because he works for Titan and they're kind of handling property IPs. I forget the correct terminology, but he said a lot of that's now, you can basically say that Marvel does that now because they're like a big corporate company that handles the, so true, the IPs. And it's like, yeah. I really didn't think of it like that, but you can see it that way, definitely.
That's the way they've gone, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not just comics anymore. The more important aspects of their character development occur elsewhere, don't they, to a certain extent?
Yeah, well, like a kind of a big company owns those IPs now, and they kind of get them to do whatever. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting guy.
The Disney influence, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, sort of undoubtedly. Yeah, I think so. And we had a chat with Jason Atomic, who ran Pat Mills' panel later on.
Yep.
We had a good chat with Jason. Jason is such a big comics fan.
Yeah.
Just such a good guy. He did a 2000 AD exhibition a few months ago, or about a year ago, I suppose, maybe. And in that, I don't know if you know this, but he famously cut up a copy of issue number 2, Prog 2, which everyone knows is the first appearance of Judge Dredd, as part of the exhibition. And I said, oh, you're a bit brave doing that. I said, you get any blowback off the fans? And he went, nah. He said, that was one that got brought in the shop, and it was the knob one, because it was an issue. Okay, it was Prog 2, but the bloke's brother had drawn penises on every character in the comic. So it wasn't worth anything anyway. I said, oh, okay, well, that's kind of cool, isn't it? You know.
That's a nice little publicity stunt for essentially what's worthless.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, did you say you'd had hold of that magazine and you'd been drawing in it beforehand?
Yes, that's me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll be popping by your table at Nottingham. The bio.
My kid-friendly books, you mean?
I tell you what, like, because they did, like, Pat was there for about 2 hours signing.
Non-stop as well. He didn't get a break, did he? Yeah.
And we kind of was there for a bit, and then we went off to Gosh. Because they were having a no-brow
event that night, weren't they? We bumped into Mike Medaglia, didn't we?
Yep.
And it was also Steve Walsh's last day there. So Steve, who anyone who goes to Gosh will know, top bloke. And he's moving house, so he's leaving the shop, which he'll be a great loss as well. So I think Mike and a few other people had turned up to have a drink with him after the no-brow thing as well. So it's quite good.
But we still got back for the Pat Mills talk. And going back to Jason, he is such a knowledgeable dude.
He isn't he?
Really,
yeah.
Really knowledgeable. Like, he kind of brings stuff up from the comics and observations he's made. He's like, that's really insightful. I didn't think of that or didn't get that. And he was drawing really nice parallels between certain comics and certain things that was going on at the time. And
yeah, some really interesting points he brought out. One of my favourites was about how Tony Skinner, who's the long-term right partner of Pat's, who I think they did Punisher 2099 and Accident Man and a few other books together, kind of got a bit of a sort of rough deal at 2000 AD and was never sort of taken on properly because he's a Wiccan. Is that right,
Dan? That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and so Jason was laughing because he's saying, it's all right if you're a magician like, you know, Alan Moore or Grant Morrison, but if you're a witch, that's a big no-no. Yeah, yeah. It's nice that 2000 AD drew that sort of line in the sand. Yeah, well, magicians, like, and you know,
he was like not just like a guy that went into Waterstones and picked up a book on witchcraft and thought, right, I'm going to be a witch now. He's like from a family of witches that like have stories and traditions passed down the generations. Yeah. And he was like a generational witch, and he invited, as part of writing the comic book, Finn invited Pat along to one of the coven meetings.
And Pat didn't really elaborate on that. I'm not sure whether, you know, something went on at that. I'm going to ask him when I see him.
Yeah. Kind of, it'd be interesting his answer or non-answer, because he'll be answering either way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
best not to ask him in front of Lisa. Yeah.
No, I was like, wow, okay, interesting. And, but yeah, the kind of the point he made of like Grant Morrison and Alan Moore kind of consider themselves magicians, and that's fine.
Yeah.
He was Wiccan, and apparently there was a big kind of, people were really up against it and didn't like it at all. God fuck knows why. I don't know.
Yeah. And he brought along the famous controversial, I think Jason brought along the famous controversial Action Comics cover, didn't he? With the policeman lying on the ground and the kid with the chain waving it above his head. And they got Pat to read the headlines.
Yeah.
From that, which is quite amusing.
Yeah.
And Pat admitted, look, he said that people were saying, we finally shocked Pat with that cover. And he says, I think they're probably right. And the other thing he talked about, sorry, mate, go on.
So he was playing it out like he set all this thing up, and then he didn't have any control over that, and they came up with a comic and show Pat and said, look at this. And he was like, fucking hell.
What have you done that for?
God, what have you done? And like, yes, we finally shot Pat, but like, Pat clocked that there was a very thin line in the sand that he was skirting around, and this had just taken a massive leap over it. And as you well know what happened, it all kicked off, and it was bad, wasn't it, Action? They just kind of knocked it on the head.
Well, it got a load of, it got like a, one of those sort of media political blowbacks in it, and it eventually went, and you know, it became a sort of watered down version and stuff like that. Yeah, but he spoke really nicely of some of the artists, didn't he?
Very nice. Yeah,
Joe Calhoun, who he did Charlie's War. Yeah, really nice. I mean, he mentioned a couple of strips I didn't know Joe done: Football Family, Robinson, and Kid Chameleon. Although Pat did say Kid Chameleon, terrible story, great art.
I think I'm going to have to. I haven't read Charlie's War in years, and I think when I read it, I was a bit too young to
read it.
I just thought that was another war story, and I think I have to buy it again and read through it again.
Yeah,
because I think that deserves a.
Yeah, definitely.
Re-examine as it were,
isn't it? I think. Yeah. Sorry, mate, go on.
It's a great collection, that one.
Yeah, it is really good. Yeah.
So that's all of it in one whack. That's all of it. Okay. Interesting.
Okay.
But there's a couple of kind of process things that Pat was talking about, and he does mention these in his book. And if you're kind of interested in comics, as I'd imagine you would be listening to this show, in any way, and the process stuff, he comes out with so many kind of tips and ideas and reasoning for why he's made certain judgment calls or how he's enacted things over the years. And one of them is have the title of your comic be the lead character. And why I think that doesn't always hold true, there is certainly something to that.
You know the game, don't you? You know,
yeah.
It was like fucking Iron Fist or, you know, something like that, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. It's obviously Red Mask, you got that covered. Yeah. Cockney Kung Fu, not so much, but then the pun in the wordplay helps it. I mean, Vanguard's not at all, because...
Well, no, it's the team, isn't it?
Yeah, but kind of by the time where I've got to in the story now, there is no team called...
But the beginning of the story was all based around that team, so...
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll have to scrap every one of my comments.
But to be fair, I think where Pat's coming from is a very commercial aspect. Yeah. His view is from like having your characters in these weekly anthologies that'd be sold on newsstands, stuff like that, and very identifiable. But he was, very interesting stuff. It had me thinking, like, why couldn't they be a similar kind of thing of like a web comic or a PDF that's released weekly, and the artists maybe only do one or two pages a week, and then that's emailed out to people, but then that PDF is like an issue in itself, and you'd every week you'd get this, the update to it, and it'd be like a comic, weekly comic. They'd have like, what, I don't know, if you even have 10 contributors doing two pages each.
British Weekly Comics?
Is that not what, like, is it Ace's Heart?
Aces Weekly, is it?
Aces Weekly, yeah. Is that not similar to what they do?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I've honestly not heard of them. So
I have to ashamedly say I've not read it. But that's the David Lloyd comic you're talking about.
Gav Mitchell has done work in that, hasn't he?
Oh, okay.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
So is that what they do? Like a kind of like an email thing where they send you a comic or... Is it online?
I'm on shaky ground here, fellas. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Quick move on. The other thing he talked about a lot was dealing how he deals with artists and how they, you know, how he writes for them and how what he does, and occasionally he changes his style, you know, depending on who the artist is and stuff like that. It was very interesting. Yeah,
so it was like a kind of a romance. A writer
that's how he described it. He says it's like you go on a date, you talk them round, you know, when you draw this comic, you know, you inspire them and make them interested. Yeah, do a little dance. Yeah, that sort of thing.
I can understand that, because you get approached and then sort of like that, you try and chat them up with your idea for the comic, as it were.
It is, isn't it?
Is that spark between you? And if there isn't it there, you can't really go forward.
Yeah, I get that completely. Being just a writer, I think that's a good metaphor. You know, you got to interest the creator, haven't you? You know, the artist, you got to keep him sparked and inspired and stuff like that. Definitely, yeah, something I'm very conscious of.
You haven't read the book already or the audiobook, which is great, I really recommend getting that. I would do so and give a go because it's fascinating. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So that was Be Pure, Be Innocent, Behave. 2000 AD and Drudge Dread, The Secret History by Pat Mills.
Be vigilant. You said be innocent.
Oh, did I? Sorry.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
You're always about the justice, aren't you?
And the other thing about it was there was a bloke with a very annoying laugh who was behind us.
Hopefully if Vince has done his editing, that was the laugh you heard.
Yes, a minute ago.
The top of the show.
Yeah, yeah, folks. If you wondered what the hell was that started the show, that's what it was.
Because he did this, like, he kept on making a joke, like, Pat would make a lot of jokes. He's a funny guy. And sometimes this guy would, like, kick off with this laugh, and I'd look around and sort of, like, catch Tony's eyes, like, fucking hell.
And then Tony laughs.
I just laugh at Dan's exasperation at this point.
But it wasn't every joke. It was kind of like...
Just a really weird moments. It's like there was a party going on, and they were chatting in the back. But it wasn't, though. Everyone was sort of dead silent, weren't they?
Yeah. There was another great moment when there's a chap down the front and he was talking about, like, kind of bringing sex into the comics and intimacy. And he started a reference to a certain event in the certain comic. And then Pat was just kind of like, I don't really have much of an idea of this, but if you can...
Prove it to me, yeah.
So then, like, a couple of minutes later, he showed him something on the phone and he was like, nah. This is great. It's so awkward.
Yeah, it was awkward, wasn't it? Yeah. Pat was being so nice as well.
Pat was being just an absolute star.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it ran on and on, and I think Jason had told us, the shopper told him, just go as long as you like, because you know how Pat is. He's got loads of interesting stuff to say. So they went on for ages, and then the shop closed, and then just the whole of the shop just poured into the pub opposite. So we just went to the pub for hours on end, and it just continued. You know, and Pat telling stories, and, you know, it's great. Great night. Really good. Orbital do some excellent events. They really do.
I wasn't there, but I did get I laughed out loud. Obviously the lads were updating me with their evening exploits, and there was a message I sent that Tony said Dan's already headed towards one book. Can you remember the title of that book?
Was it something, A Year of My Tits or something like that?
The Story of My Tits.
And then we sent you the front of another book, which we can't say on air.
No.
Yeah.
But I was laughing a lot.
Because that whole side bit's a bit saucy.
So we walked in there. The first book that Dan looked at was a book called that had tits in the title. And then I opened another book and it just had a full-on brown eye close-up.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, we're just like, yep.
Where were you reading the book?
In the box.
Yeah.
There's no toilets. So horrible.
Yeah. But I think the whole event is going to be put out on the Orbiting Pod. I think they've recorded it, so they'll stick it out. So that's good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. There you go. Good, eh?
Well, that can look forward to that laugh in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Match up my impersonation to it to that.
Quality. Yeah. Yes. So, yes, the lads were out and about with a comic event, and there's another comic event coming up soon, which we've been talking about, and Kev Brett has had a lot to do with, as he does every year.
Yeah.
Which is Nottingham Comic Con. Now, I'm going to start the conversation with a chicken or the egg story, or question, as it were. Now, Kev, obviously you're one of the co-organisers of Nottingham Comic Con.
Yeah.
Did you do the convention first and then comics, or did you make comics and then decide to do a convention?
No, I was doing comics. How it happened was, here we go, everyone sit down. I was doing my first Monkey in the Mouse stuff, and I was doing the weekly strip, and then I decided to make a book. So I did the Monkey in the Mouse Where's the Cheese book. And I applied for Thought Bubble, and that was 2013, and I didn't get in. So I just had a look around locally, And at that time, it was glorious. There weren't any other cons in the local area. So I just kind of said to the missus, I just said, you know, should we put on our own? And she was I said, well, you know, we can do it in like 3 months' time. She's like, not a chance. So she's always wanted to put on like charity events and things like that. So we thought we'd combine the two. And do it in like 6 months' time from when I suggested. So then we got the ball rolling, got people getting tables, and we got some guests lined up. And then I had an email from Thought Bubble saying, you're in. It's like, oh, man.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can read all of this in my book, The Making of a Comic Con.
So professional, so slick.
taking tips off Vince on that one. So that's kind of how it kicked off, really. And then, unfortunately, it's just been going every year.
Yeah. Now, it's the first year, so it's fourth. This is 4 years, is it? Or
this is the fifth year, yeah.
Fifth, right, okay. And initially you called it Nerdfest, didn't you? Which I think it was the first year I went.
Yep, that was the first one. I was kind of like, you know, this slick Adonis when we first started. But you look at me now and I'm like Santa.
Aged. You know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This big white beard and giant belly, you know.
Think of the ladies. Come on, think of the ladies, Kev. So how did you, because you had it in a hotel the first year, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And you had, it was a little bit different from your average convention that you go to, because you had gigs as well that were going on in the main hall as well, as I remember. Is that right?
Yeah. We wanted to do something a little bit different. So we did some live music. So we put kind of the bands on this stage that was at the front.
Right. And
it worked great. People loved it. The only problem was, it was right, the speakers were right by the kind of the front of the exhibitors, and it was quite loud, so you couldn't actually talk to each other while the bands were on. So it was it was brilliant. I loved it, you know. But a lot of people came out of there half deaf, so
we kind of everything.
And you run it every year for a number of charities, don't you? Did you want to say what they were, Kev?
Yeah. This year we are raising money for the Royal British Legion.
Yeah.
Obviously, they do the poppy appeal and help veterans and people in the armed forces.
Great.
Motor Neuron Disease Association. We know someone who recently just died due to having motor neuron disease. So
it
would be quite fitting to for them. And the Staden Children's Holiday Fund, which is a charity that takes underprivileged kids on a 2-3 day holiday.
Great.
Which is mental. it's all good. That's what we want to do. So.
Yeah. In terms of like the sort of like fundraising and stuff, I mean, how does that work with a convention and the sort of like, you know, what goes to charity? Is it, does it, all the tickets and there's like collections and stuff at the event? How do you work all that in?
Yeah, well, what we do is we give a pound of every standard ticket that we sell to the charities. Plus, we hold the charity raffle on the day with some, you know, awesome things that people have donated. The exhibitors and guests have donated.
Yeah.
So we give all that money as well. And last year, we started doing the Nottingham Comic Con anthology comic.
Yes.
100% of the proceeds that we make on that goes to the charities as well. So,
nice one.
Which was funded on Kickstarter. Congratulations!
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You made twice your money this year, didn't you? I think
we did, which is great because you know you're not allowed to run charity things on Kickstarter, but that's not what we were doing. We were funding the printing of the comics.
Excellent. So.
I didn't know that about Kickstarter.
So if you're a charity, you can't go, oh, well, we want to raise money for this particular thing.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Would that would be more sort of GoFundMe or something like that, would it? Yeah. Presumably. Yeah.
Presume so. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a plethora of things you can do that on.
You said plethora again.
Well done.
Yeah. Cool. So, is there any sort of good things, bad things that have happened? That I know, I really enjoyed your book about conventions. Is there anything that you want to talk about a bit? You know, if someone decided to run a convention, obviously not in October. If you run one in October, we'll kill you. Yeah.
Portsmouth and Bournemouth are good places for it.
Honestly, I tried to, last year, I think it was, trying to ring up a couple. I left running about six places looking for somewhere to hold, a small comics event. Yeah. And it fucking took me forever to try and speak to the right person. And it was like, oh, yeah, okay, when are you looking for? How many people? And it was like, well, I've only got kind of hazy numbers. Yeah. And it was such a it's not my kind of thing, event organizing, as you can probably tell. So I imagine a lot of that is kind of, event organizing. It must be difficult.
Yeah, especially when it's not, when it's not your forte.
No.
I think the first year we looked around for what was suitable and emailed out all these different places.
Yeah.
And the only one that came back that was suitable was the hotel that we held it in. I think for them it's just a case of, well, as long as you pay for the room and the area and the space and all the rest of it, then they don't really care.
Okay.
I mean, the place we're in now is slightly different because they're a more reputable establishment. So again, we just kind of emailed them and said, this is what we'd like to do. And they were they were really good with it. So
for those that don't know, you're in a university now. Is it a university, is it?
Yeah, it's actually a company called Nottingham Conference Centre.
Right.
But I don't know whether they sublet it with the university or what, but the university uses a big area of it.
Yeah.
So the entrance is by the university.
Oh, I see. So to me, that's the perfect place to have it because you've got nice areas, to have stalls and stuff like that. You've got proper rooms with audiovisual equipment for talks, but you've also got the benefit of having food places and places to sit down and read and stuff like that as well, you know.
Yeah, we were just blown away by the place when we first looked at it. It was kind of a case of, okay, how much is this one going to be?
Right.
But in the end, that's what the exhibitor tables pay for. They pay for the venue.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect. I mean, we've got areas for a kids' zone, so kids can go and do crafting. We've got the library set up there this year to run workshops for the kids and stuff.
Real.
And then, like you say, we've got seminar room to do the talks. And then there's an area for some live music, which isn't going to deafen all the exhibitors and the guests. So, yeah.
Cool. So what you're saying is, so you put it out for tables. You say, look, we've got all these tables to go. And then I suppose you breathe a sigh of relief when they're all bought, aren't they? Because then you realise, right, we're over the line now. Is that how it works? Yeah,
pretty much. We've got to sell a certain amount of tickets to pay for the venue, a certain amount of tables to pay for the venue.
Yeah.
So when we hit that, it's like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. How have you found the demand for tables over the past few years? Because obviously we've heard sort of the rise and fall, the ups and downs of small press and independent. I mean, have you found, when you put tables out, is it fairly immediate?
I think, to be fair, we tend to get sort of a quarter straight away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then kind of it sort of dribs and drabs over the year. Our Twitter feed goes crazy when we announce tables available. Yeah. And then again, when we announce the table plant, like we did today, it just suddenly, oh, I'm at this table. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a sigh of relief when we finally hit that kind of number.
Yeah.
How do you go about picking guests? That's something I've always wondered about. And so not only do you pick guests, but do you pick secondary, might be able to make it if someone drops out, guests? Because that's often, you often on the run up to it, pretty much every convention you hear that someone's dropped out, don't you? There's with like deadline woes or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to say that, I've got this A list and B list, but
right,
I just come to you, Tony, and you just tell me. Kind of how it works.
So Tony is a list.
Yeah. Who should we have, Tony? Have this person. Oh, I can't get hold of them. What else?
Not quite that. I may have recommended one person this year. I think he's slightly over-egging.
All joking aside, we do kind of pick Tony's brains for some, and then we target some of the big guys who,
yeah,
generally speaking, are too busy. And with it being a one-day con, we find it hard to fund kind of their hotel bills and all the rest of it.
Okay.
But it's great when you get Jock tweeting saying, thanks, but I can't make it or whatever. That's always nice. It's better.
Yeah, definitely. That's the gentleman in these people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it works. I mean, we find people that we want and then we email them and they either can or they can't. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have like a wish? I chatted to, I think I've chatted to you and I've chatted to Dan and, yeah, from Dan Mallier and Stu and all different people and Izzy and, you know, who run these comic conventions. And I always say to them, why don't you give Warren Ellis a try? You know, why don't you give Alan Moore a try? You know, there's nothing lost. You know, these people are enthusiastic about comics and they're comic fans themselves, you know, and sometimes you might be surprised, you know.
Well, we managed to get Duncan McGrady last year.
Duncan's great, isn't he?
That was a steal. That was amazing. We were well impressed with that. But half the time, it's just trying to find these people. You know, it's like, well, we want to email them, but it's not like they publish their emails online or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I asked Jock because I think I went through his website and a few others who either can't do it or just don't do them or just too busy, you know.
For instance, a DM on Twitter is, I mean, if you ask me, it's fairly pointless in a lot of, when you're shouting into the void.
I mean, we've experienced it, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly, you know, straight up honestly, I've asked some bigger names. Now on Twitter, you can actually sort of DM people out of the blue. You don't necessarily.
Well, only if they're following you, which is always the hardest part.
And I've messaged some people, and you hear nothing. But it's not a slight against anyone.
I mean, we had for a long time. We had Miller Watch, didn't we? As a regular sort of, you know, because he started following us, and we thought, oh, this looks good. Let's see if we can get him on, we've not had a reply. I actually really like Mark Miller.
Yeah.
I actually really like what he does, and I like listening to him. You know, so he would be a brilliant guest for us. But we've not heard back from him. But conversely, Al Ewing wasn't following us, and I just openly messaged him on Twitter, and he replied and saying, "Yeah, I'd love to." And he was a great guest, wasn't he, Al?
Yeah,
really good. You know, so I think I often think you've got to go for it, and I think there's little areas that we forget about. I think sometimes in this country of, you know, people who are selling big numbers, and that tends to be, there's an awful lot of people working on 2000 AD or on the Phoenix or, you know, books like that which sell big numbers and would be very popular draws. But I think some conventions sort of fall into the rut of the same people, you know. I love Thought Bubble this year, but I think for a while it became a bit samey with some of the guests, you know.
I think a lot of the time, I mean, for us, because it's just me and Kel doing the whole thing, it's kind of, we're far too British to ask, you know. We might just be too busy, you know, so we won't bother them.
Yeah, so it's the fear of rejection, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm secure in myself, as you can tell.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing Rachel Ball at Nottingham, and I'm a big fan, and we're fans of her book, The Inflatable Woman, we talked about on the show a few months ago. And I was chatting to her about it, and I said, you know, I hope you don't mind, but I've put your name forward as would be an interesting guest at Nottingham. And she says, I don't really know how you get on to how you go to conventions as a guest. I didn't really know. She said, I spoke to a friend of mine, and they just said, oh, you just ask or something. But I didn't really want to ask, though that's really kind of you. And she was sort of pleased, you know. Mm. And I think a lot of people, they don't really understand how it works. And I think some people think, oh, it's a bit of a closed shop, it's all their pals or something like that. But it's genuinely not, is it, Kev? You know?
Yeah. No, I think we've found as well that a lot of times when you ask someone, because you think, oh, well, they don't do conventions, you know, they're far too big. And you ask them, and they go, wow, I've never been asked before. So, oh.
Yeah.
Well, that explains it all then, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just getting out there and just asking people whether they want to do it. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? They could either ignore you or say no, or say yes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You've got a great guest in the end, potentially. Just ask them, and then if they say no, they say no.
Yeah.
And I know you've asked a couple of people who've said, look, I can't do it this year, but maybe next year. And next year you'll ask them, and we'll eventually guilt them into coming, won't we?
Yeah. You know? Unfortunately, sometimes we ask, like, you know, the Awesome Comic Podcast to come, and they say yes every year.
Christ, they always turn up like a bad penny.
Yeah. I'll turn up to the opening of a bag of crisps.
Yeah. You like that woman who plays Holly out of Red Dwarf?
Cool. Yep.
Something Spirit. Was that Hannah Spirit?
Yeah. Hannah Spirit.
Yeah.
£20 a signature.
Yeah.
Or a pair of shoes.
Yeah. I'm going to be at Bognor Con in a couple of
weeks. I like Bognor's alright. I like Bognor.
Bogcon.
Bogcon. I'm having a con in my bog. Yeah. I'll do it. Yeah. Dan Mallier did put a rather sarcastic video on our Facebook page today, which had me chuckling.
Yeah.
Have you seen that, guys, yet?
Yeah,
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. It's interesting because Pat Mills says, go back to Pat Mills, he said about putting his book forward for like a kind of a sitcom, and I said, oh, it's a bit too niche. And it's like, well, this fucking comedy, it's got the common human element that people find funny about it, and yeah, it only has to have that bit being relatable, and then everyone's in. And when you see videos like that, the one posted on the Facebook page, you're like, fucking hell, you can identify what's going on here and get a laugh out of it.
Definitely. So, how have you found the? Sorry, go on.
No, you go on.
I was going to say, how have you found the process of doing the anthology, Kev? Because that's I really loved last year's. Really good it was. Not apart from the bit I did, but it was great fun to take part in. Have you had to turn people away? Have you got to that sort of point of fame yet around it? Or
we've had people ask after the event.
Right. Okay.
That's. Again, that's just another one where you just ask people.
Yeah.
You tell them what it's about. It's to raise money for charities. And majority of the time, you just say, do you want to do a comic for this anthology? And they go, yeah. You don't need to tell them anything. It could be anything. It could be a bomb, for goodness sake, you know. But, yeah, I mean, that's how kind of we do it. We just ask people who we like, their art, their stories. And we've been completely blessed that majority of them have said yes. So
is there a general, you know, sort of reason for the book, or is it just anything, or do you say, well, it's obviously got to be family friendly, isn't it? I think
yeah. I mean, that's something that we kind of try to instill coming on this show. But that's something we try to instill in the convention as well, so you know. We're very family focused, very family friendly.
Very much so. Yeah.
And we want the comics to reach as many people as possible. So,
yeah.
Doing the anthologies, to be honest, it's just for my amusement.
It's definitely something that I'm more and more interested in, like comics. For...
Oh, you're too late. We've already sent it to print.
No. You cheeky bastard. I mean, comics for everyone and for families and stuff.
Yeah.
Because when I've been at the smaller shows, and you have families coming in. And these kids are just eager to buy comics, and you know, and you just see them look at all these tables. That's it. That's the audience, you know. I know. Obviously, this show we're effing and jeffing, and our anthology's not safe for work. But you know,
or anywhere else, really. Yeah. To be fair,
all ages comics and kids comics, whether it be weekly or you know whatever you see at the small press cons, they're hugely, hugely important.
Yeah,
and there's stuff that I want to do. You know, I've got ideas for like kids comics and stuff. Wow, I hate the term kids comics.
Yeah.
You know, it's comics for everyone, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I like kids comics.
I mean, that Phoenix, they had a tweet or a Facebook thing about the issue they'd go up to, and it's like, holy fuck, I didn't realise they'd done that many.
It's 300.
I went to their website, and I said, holy fuck.
Yeah. But, like, they've done a lot.
It's 300, isn't it? They've just hit the 300 mark. Yeah.
I thought there would be something like 20, 30, 40, but 300, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I once had to turn down a pull quote from Dan Butcher for Koala Conspiracy. It's effing ace. Well, I get put out from my book.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, sidetrack.
Yeah. I remember when you emailed me and said, oh, did I fancy taking part in it? I could feel the trepidation in your fingers touching the keys, Kev, as you were thinking, oh my God, what are we going to get here?
Capital letters, family friendly, you know.
All
I think writing comics for kids, especially humour ones, I think it requires...
Definitely.
Not a special touch, but you got to understand the humour and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be capable of doing it. I don't know.
Well, I think for me, like, don't write down to kids. I think if no. you that's when it seems fake and it's trying too hard, is when it's trying, you know, like TV shows, isn't it? When it talks down to kids, they're not interested. Whereas, yeah. You know, Pat, back to Pat Mills' book, you know, he talks about how, like, kids loved, you know, the guns and, you know, all, they love yeah. the they love adventure and they love fun yeah. and, like, stuff like that. You don't have to be like, oh, here I am in a magical forest made of sponge cake. Oh, actually, that's quite a good idea.
Write that down.
Write that down.
Yeah. You like a sponge, don't you, as well?
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. Otherwise,
should I have a cup of tea as well?
That's good. Oh, lovely cup of tea. Wonderful.
Yeah.
What were you talking about?
Sponges.
Cakes.
Yeah, we were yeah. talking about writing down to kids' comics. Yeah.
Yeah, and like the most successful ones, and I think we are seeing and going to see even more in the small press and independent scene, I think. I predict that could be the next wave. You know how there's certain genres or themes that are quite popular at the time? I think the all-ages comics are going to hit big over the next couple of years. And it's not to say that there's not there's loads of brilliant ones out there already, but I can see that,
I've got something. I mean, my son's old now, but when he was a kid, I would have loved to have those comics just to give him in the back of the car. I think I said this. I wrote a thing about Late Nights today, the book from Matt Strott and John Late, which is a brilliant kids' adventure comic. Do you know what I mean? It really is.
Yeah.
You know,
it's what you want. You want that comic you can give to your kid in the back of the car, and he can read it, and then you can talk to him about it. You know, what do you think about that? And it's about a sort of family of spies.
Yeah,
and I think that's a brilliant idea. You know, like a sort of junior James Bond, and you know, dad's a bit of a secret agent, and the kids are inventing sort of gadgets and stuff. And I think that's a great idea.
Some of the best,
so much room for it.
Yeah, you know? Some of the best moments I've had at conventions, like some of the small conventions, are when kids come up with their family and stuff, and they pick up the red mask, and then possibly a year goes by, I go to the same convention, and the same kid comes up and buys another issue because they love it, and you know, that's an awesome customer. Do you know what I mean? That's the best customer.
Another Pat Mills one is the writing comics for kind of the different sexes, the boys and the girls. Like, the boys loved action and guns, the bigger the better, but the girls were more interested in mysteries.
Supernatural,
wasn't it?
Supernatural, yeah. And it's like, he kind of went over it again on Friday, and it fed into another thing on the webcomic creators board of designing your thumbnail for your comic, like if you've got it on one of the big reader sites, that Tapas or whatever, and this guy, sorry, a lady trialed out like two different thumbnails over the course of 2 weeks. One was of kind of like the magical girl in the story, that sort of that elements of kind of magic and mystery, and the other one was a male character who I can't remember what he was doing, but essentially the female character got like three times as much traffic in than the male character, and it's because the synopsis of the comic and the way it was presented was like it was getting a lot more female readers in. I think it was because it was essentially aimed at them, but it's amazing that little thumbnail image would be the tipping point between someone clicking on it and checking it out and then not.
Well, I was told the other week that, you know, when you open up a Kindle or something, and usually on the front there's an advert for some mystery book or some the late Kellerman book or whatever, majority of the time they're advertising for women because women prefer, they do more reading than men, and they prefer kind of the more mystery led books, which I thought was an interesting I don't know how it is or not, but
It just goes to prove something I've suspected for a long time, is that women are far more intelligent than men. They just look down on us like a bunch of idiots.
You've suspected that. I've known that for years.
Yeah.
Especially after listening to this lot.
Yeah.
You're one of us now, Kev.
Yeah, you're in. Because, I mean, your comics are entirely family-friendly. Is that right, Kev?
Yeah. I've got a couple that are kind of aimed at grown-ups, but kids can read them. There's nothing offensive or anything.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on the sort of like the family, you know, the family comic scene at the moment?
The Phoenix, obviously, you got to put that up there and say how great they are. But this was one of the hardest things to do this week, was find something to recommend at the end of the show, because I was looking through all the comics that I've got on my shelf, and they do tend to be more family-friendly ones. I've got a ton of Asterix ones that my kids are reading at the minute.
Real. Good stuff. Yeah.
Tintin stuff, you know. And then, well, I'm not going to say these two yet, but yeah, most of mine are family-friendly stuff. And
yeah,
most of the time I'm buying kids' comics for me, and then the kids can read them afterwards.
Right.
I've got Jamie Smart.
That's a bit selfish.
But yeah, I know. Fishhead Steve.
Yeah.
Which is proper kids, you know, probably for 7-8-year-olds or whatever. But it's phenomenal. That guy's got such an amazing imagination that you just think, just look at it. And it's funny. It's kind of like, you know how Pixar films have got so many adult jokes in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing, you know. It's terrific. I love it.
Cool. I mean, what sort of influenced you to create comics? Is there anything that you were, you know, I know you kept, you know, I suppose Asterix, were you ever a fan of that when you were a kid, or?
Oh, yeah, we were a typical British family growing up, you know, Beano the Dandy.
Right.
And we'd have Asterix and Tintin, and then things like Eagle and Roy the Rovers, which is coming back, so I saw on John Freeman's.
Yes, John loves Roy the Rovers. He, I think if John could buy every issue that was released, he would. I
had a Roy the Rovers face.
Did you?
Mm. Yeah.
I had Roy the Rovers hair for a while.
Did you have his legs though?
Oh yeah, baby.
Didn't they? Are they still doing that striker?
God.
The sun and this kind of.
Is that the one that went a bit sort of poser for a while?
It is, it's all CG, isn't it? Oh, it's just.
I feel bad because any comic about football, like I can just about feign an interest in football when it comes to comics and football. So, oh, fuck. This change of channel for me. Sorry.
Roy the Rovers had like four main stories that they could repeat again and again and again.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. The goal scored in the last minute. Yeah, here we go again. Yeah.
Or they share the cup at the end, you know, one of the two.
Did ever do one where like someone was kidnapped close to Roy and he had to kind of miss a goal or something for some sort of international betting syndicate?
My favourite one was when Roy got he got really bad on crack cocaine. And he robbed a diner.
Oh, was that, Roy the that was the smack years, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He wakes up in a hotel bed and there's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't know who he is or what's happened to him.
For those
but
listeners
still
who want.
Scores a goal that evening.
Yeah.
For those listeners who want.
Goal.
Yeah. For those listeners who want to read it.
We are available for scripts for the new series if anyone wants to approach
it.
It's more like Roy of the Ragers. That's what it is.
Oh, that's a good title. Roy accused of rape. Roy the Rapers. That'd make a good story.
God, I'll tell you what, though. It's quite realistic.
Yeah, it is. That's always happening to football, isn't it? And they always sort of weirdly, coincidentally get off or the charges get dropped. What a strange coincidence. I'm not directing this towards anyone at all. But yeah.
What gets me about it is, oh yeah, he was a really talented footballer. So fucking hell, what
about that got to do with it?
Jesus. Anyway, Roy gets too dark.
Roy, if you're listening, please don't get this. We're not trying to insinuate anything.
Yeah, I'm going to start writing that one now.
Nottingham Comic Con does not endorse any of this.
Right, bollocks. That's too late.
I think any of the listeners who are thinking about going and made their minds up about it now. You turned off.
To be honest, when we got the hashtag STD, you should have known that this car was going off a cliff.
I have to make up a mock sun cover with that
Roy
of the.
Yeah. Roy's a good bloke, though. It wouldn't be down to him. It'd be one of the one of the other players, wouldn't it? Yeah, I think so.
Don the blonde wig and stitch Roy up.
Yeah, then done a bank robbery.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I reckon. Yeah.
Roy of the Hypno.
Oh my God.
I look forward to listening to this tomorrow with my wife.
Wife and family gathered round.
Yeah, you could have one of the ones where it hints at it, Roy, like famous footballer of the Rovers caught in scat scandal.
Yeah.
For the old Daily Fail can't got the bollocks to put out who it really is. So I think that'd be good. I think that'd work. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Roy fits really easily on a Twitter. Three letters.
It's almost like a
Brit right now.
Yeah, it's about a British comic institution that we've just ripped to shreds.
Yeah, we're just bringing it up to date, making it realistic.
That's true. Yeah.
Nothing about the football, though.
Absolutely nothing about the football.
Roy the Rovers throws himself on the floor and cries when not touched by other player.
Yeah.
And then demands £50 million a year. That'd be fine. That's a realistic story, isn't it? Yeah.
So I would never leave this country. I love it. Next month, signing for Real Madrid.
That'd be Roy of the Real. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. There you go.
It writes itself.
Yeah.
Remember this, Kev. When we bring this book out, remember you were here when it started.
Probably airing at Nottingham Comic Con. Yeah.
I think Kev will be forgetting he was ever on this show soon. That's fine.
That'd be Roy's fault with the real.
Yeah. Him, no.
So
hashtag blame Roy.
West went off on a tangent there.
Yeah.
I do like making that tangent joke. It's
good. You
do, don't
you? I like that. Yeah. Oh, a plethora of times that you've done it. So. Who have been your favourite guests, Kevin? Who have been the ones that you really haven't liked?
Watch yourself.
You can't say me. Yeah. Go on, just go with it. What makes a good guest to you? Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So you get a guest and, you know, how, you know, what for a comic professional, perhaps listening to this, sorry about, firstly, I apologise, what would be your ideal comic guest?
People who engage. I think that's the thing. If they're just sat not engaging with anybody, or I mean, we did have a guest a couple of years ago, I'm not going to name names, but it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
he arrived at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really? Oh wow.
And it was just, what are you doing? You've just missed your panel that you were meant to be on.
Yeah,
we had to obviously get somebody else to do it, and he didn't say a word to anybody other than, oh, I'm a guest. And then he came and sat at his table. I don't think he sold anything. And it's like, well, whose fault is that? You know. Anyway, the good ones, like Etherington Brothers.
Brilliant, yes.
Phenomenal. They're, you know, just chatting to everybody and it's getting them to stop. That's the problem. Those guys, they drink too much caffeine. Those guys are ace. They really are ace. And Mark comes on every year and he's
Lambo.
Good old Lambo. And he's always up for doing the panels and, you know.
Yep. Yeah, he's... and he makes rude sausage jokes, which are safe for kids.
So, you know, just like I say, just the guys that actually seem like they want to be there.
Yeah. Definitely. I think you're right. I think engagement is, I mean, Dan Mallier puts me right, at least, rather than just like a tweet, retweet it. Mm. It's like 1 second extra in your life, you can do that.
Yeah.
And then there's a sort of spiral upwards of that, isn't there? So bringing along something for the charity, raffle is always good. Engaging on panels, you know, speaking to other guests. I always make a point of, like, getting there early, popping around, see who's there, having a chat with them, that sort of thing. And you can always tell the people who are up for doing a panel. My favourite ever panel may have involved Vince when I made him go on the panel at Nottingham. Which... Yeah. We can't talk about that, Vince, can we?
I really like Rogue Trooper.
And the best thing about that one, it was videoed.
I'll tell you what, though, you were there the first year, weren't you, Tony?
Yeah.
That, because we had no idea what we were doing.
Right.
We went, oh, we're going to have some panels, and we'll get the guests on these panels, and these are the times, and we went round to the guests, and it's like, right, you're on a panel, go sit in that chair over there, and then I buggered off.
You gave them the microphone, didn't you?
They kind of sat there. So that was kind of on us. We weren't actually engaging, asking questions. We expected the audience to just start asking questions and for them to start talking. And
to be fair, they did.
They really did.
I went to Mark's one. I can't remember who Mark did his panel with. A British sort of Marvel UK guy. I'm blanking on it.
Ian Sullivan, I think. Lee Sullivan.
Lee Sullivan, yeah. And they were great because they just, like, got right into talking about, like, Bronze Age comics and, you know, this sort of thing. And then you know, obviously he'd plied a few questions in the audience with me and me and a couple of friends, and we'd ask them. And I think it went well. But you're right, when you give a microphone just purely to a creator whose job involves him not speaking to anyone and sitting at a drawing board, I suppose, maybe sort of slightly flawed. But, yeah, no, that was great. And then I think after that I chatted to Mark, and we said, why don't... And then I hosted one the following year, and that was... I think, who did we have on that? Christian Wildgoose was one of the people, wasn't it? Yeah. That was great fun. Mm. Yeah, really good. Yeah. Do you get many suggestions? Yeah, have you asked many creators who've gone, well, it's not really my bag, sort of talking?
Had a couple. Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, you know, majority of them are holed up in a little darkened room most of the time, and they don't want to talk to people.
Yeah.
Which is fine, and we can understand that.
And it also means dragging them away from their table for an hour, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, exactly. They don't want people pinching all their books. Especially not the volunteers.
Thieving bunch that they are.
So usually most people are up for it. Even, I think one year we had Piers Baker, who did Ollie and Quentin, does an Ollie and Quentin comic strip.
Right.
And he had no idea. He'd never been to a con before. And it's like, do you want to do a panel? I don't know. But in the end, I don't know how well it went down, but yeah, he was up for it, and that's what we like. You know, people are just, they're there to share what they do because people want to know.
Yeah, I think the other thing I always notice about your conventions is you've always got a cracking queue outside ready to come in. It's almost like that scene from is it Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead, where you got them all sort of scratching at the windows of the shopping centre.
You want to get out of the rain. That's what it is.
It's what, sorry?
They want to get out of the rain.
That was last year, wasn't it? It rained like nothing, didn't it? Yeah. And I think that goes a long way. You've got a little bit of a buzz in the queue, and then they all sort of race in to catch the creators they want to speak to and stuff like that. I think that's good.
Yeah, you know. That's always nice. It's always nice to see. I mean, the first year we did it, we had no clue whether anyone would turn up or, you know, whether anybody would be interested. So we looked out at sort of 6 o'clock in the morning. There's four people sat there by the door. It's like, hey, you know, this could be good. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. They're here before we are.
Bloody hell. That is good. Yeah.
So even if it's just them four, fair enough. They've been here since six, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, thankfully that all worked well, despite the multitude of issues we had on that first one.
Yeah. I mean, we've all personally, and as a group, sort of seen conventions that have worked and that have failed. Mm-hmm. Over the last few years. And a lot of that is down to the publicity leading up to the day, isn't it? One of the big problems we had with London was that London Super Comic Con was the fact that there was no advertising in the high street for it. You know, you wouldn't have known it was on unless you turned into that particular road and saw it in front of you. You know,
yeah. I think personally, we find that to be one of the hardest parts of the whole thing.
Yeah,
because you have to talk to the councils to know what you can put where and what you do and how much it's going to cost to just go out and hand flyers out. You know, so there's a lot more to it than just plastering stuff everywhere that you want it to be. You know? We looked into getting it on the side of a bus.
Really? Okay.
It was something like £300 for a week, which we thought was pretty good, but they didn't tell you which bus it was going to be on. it could have gone from Derby across to Chesterfield and never come into Nottingham City Centre.
That's not great. So it's really great to get people like in costume and stuff and get them around the event. And
we'll get Tony in cosplay.
Yeah. It'll be the first time.
That certainly helps draw people in. The costume folk.
Do you aim any events? Because I think you have a table at a convention recently, Kev.
We went to ICE in Birmingham. We didn't sell tickets there, but we certainly pushed it, and we gave flyers, and the Kickstarter was just about to start then as well, so we gave flyers for that as well. Last year we had a table at ICE again, and then another local one around here, which went down pretty well, and people, I didn't even know.
Trying to
tell people about it. So, we've managed to kind of contact a few schools this year and hopefully kind of draw some more families and kids in and you know, just get more people through the door, just to so everybody can enjoy the day.
When you go to conventions and stuff, do you like make notes? You know, do you always taking reference or research for what you could do?
Yeah, we're always spying and, you know, skulking in the corner with Tony. That sounds so wrong.
Yeah. That's what you call it, is it?
We do. We don't go, right, let's go check out this place, see what they do. We go there as an exhibitor and see how we're treated and what we like about that and what works when I'm tabling and my family are walking around the event, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not a conscious decision of, right, let's go take notes on what everyone's doing. It's more kind of I like that. That was really good. What they just did for us, you know, and let's try and incorporate that.
Yeah, because I've noticed that, like, there's a small sort of group of convention organisers who are sort of like coming together and promoting each other, like your good self and Dan Malio with Leamington and Is with Sice and, you know, and True Believers. Do you ever like share ideas with other convention organisers or talk to them about, you know, things to do or for each other and stuff?
Yeah, I'm happy to share. It's just nobody asks me. Yeah, we don't want to talk to that guy, you know. Skulking in the corner, you know.
Don't open up that can of worms. You know what our listeners are like.
Getting together and sharing ideas is a great way of kind of upping all your games, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, Shane Chebney said, oh, this works and this doesn't, and you can kind of take that on board or not, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite good because most of the like comic focused conventions are pretty willing to share stuff. Sometimes you get the other TV guest type Comic-Cons. You can't see me doing the thing, Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
Who it's very kind of a dog eat dog type thing, you know. Yeah. I'm in it for the money, so I'm not sharing any of my secrets with you. But yeah, like, happy to share stuff and take notes. And I mean, what I've noticed on Twitter is a lot of go to these comic conventions that are actually focused on comics.
Yeah.
And there's quite a lot of that sharing between.
Yeah, that's turning around at the moment. And like, there was an article in was it on the Guardian's website, wasn't it recently?
Yeah.
That certainly got a lot of pull on our, was it on our group talk?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I posted up on a couple of things, but
yeah.
It was, it wasn't a massive article, but I think it kind of put out a point that a lot of people have been thinking and discussing.
Yeah.
All right. One thing I was thinking about putting together the
anthology. God.
Anthology.
That's it. That's the word I'm fucking desperately groping for.
He can do plethora, but he can't remember anthology.
Yeah. How did you find that as a process of kind of getting together the art teams, putting it together, and so forth?
I think I added 4 stone just trying to put that together, to be honest.
from what? What Chris, were you eating?
I'm not going to answer that question. No. I really enjoy it. I like putting together the comics. It's when you've got some of the guys who have obviously got really tight deadlines for paid gigs.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously yours goes, which I completely understand, goes to the bottom of the pile, which is fair enough. But then it's kind of like, well, I can push the deadline a little bit more and then a little bit more. To the point where, right, I need to send this to print tomorrow.
You have quite a long eye on it, don't you? You give a lot of time to get it done.
Yeah, we because now we know that we're going to do one.
Yeah.
We kind of start sort of February, March, asking people for then hopefully to run a Kickstarter in August, September time.
Yeah.
And then get it off to print with enough time for it to come back for the con. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so is it all printed now? You got it all back, haven't you?
We've sent it off to Rich. He's printing it.
Yeah.
And he sent me the proofs and everything. It all looked great, so...
Nice. Yeah,
hopefully it should be with us before the convention.
Can you give us a bit of an insight into some of the stuff that's going to appear in it and some of the creators?
Yeah, I can reel them all off. There's a guy called Tony Esmond.
Oh, gosh.
Not that hack.
I know.
Now there's a bit of a story behind that one, because I was going to do 2 strips for last year's one, and I did one with Jen, and we did a sort of bit of a sort of a loving piss take of Misty, Called Shifty, and then we did.
I remember that.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. You helped with that, didn't you, Dan, as well?
Yeah, I did a little bit of Netrunner.
Yeah, it's good. And then I was going to do another one with someone, but they couldn't get it done, so it sort of fell out of bed for last year's. And then you contacted me this year, didn't you?
Yeah,
Kevin. You said like, who do you want to work on it with? And I said, well, I want to work on it with you, because I think, to be fair, when I wrote it, I had your style in mind. It's absolutely killed on it, mate. It's actually brilliant. Exactly how I wanted it to be is how you brought it out. It's like brilliant fun. Oh, yeah, okay. Very Thanks. Good.
Yeah,
there you go. So have a look at that. So it's well drawn and terribly written, but there you go.
We've got Roger Langridge. He's doing a Fred the Clown, if you've ever read any of his
definitely
Clown stuff.
Yeah.
Got Steve Beckett's done one. He does stuff for the Beano and what have you. Mr. Hope, he did the front cover, and he's also done a story inside. We've got the Reckless Guys.
Nice.
Oh, real.
Only because we were struggling for people to find, to be honest.
We love you.
Nick Prolix has done one.
Brill. Nice. Nick's governor. Yeah.
Sally Jane Thompson, Chris Paul.
Oh, I love Sally's work. This is what I always say about Sally's work. If you're in a bit of a rut at work and you're having a bad day, go to her Twitter feed and go through all of her, some of the most gorgeous pictures on paper ever made have been by Sally. I love her work. So good.
And she's just a lovely, lovely woman as well.
Right? She is, yeah. She's so a guest this year, isn't she, again? Or she's got a table this year, isn't she?
She has got a table, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff.
Chris Baldy, some guy called John Layton, Dan Butcher. somebody called Baracus. I can't quite read that one. Billy Baracus, Owen and Gav Mitchell, they've done a Pup and Grumpy Corn one again. Which
Real.
I'm not allowed to have favourites, so I'm...
Okay.
Swift. Mark Cunning's done a piece for us. Rick Eads, Dan Harris.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, so it's just... there's a few more. Laura Howell, Drew Poser, my wife has written one.
Brill.
So, yeah, our friend James has done one as well. And the Etherington brothers let us use one of their Stransky pictures again, so...
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it's we're all good.
And how much is that for that anthology?
That'll be a fiver, that.
See, that's nice. Great, isn't it? That's a great really price good. As well. Yeah. Yeah, for a big, thick anthology, that's
I'm
great
looking
price.
Forward to getting my hands on that.
Yeah, me too.
I bet you are.
Yeah.
Shall we stop saying that?
Has it been, I bet you are?
Yeah.
I bet you are.
Yeah, it's our new thing. It's our catchphrase. I'm trying to develop a catchphrase, Kev. That's our current one. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I should have said, I bet you are.
speaking of your own work, though, Kev, Tom Curry, good old Tom Curry, friend of the show. We need friends. Yeah, he actually brought in two avocados and gave me a pork pie at London Super Comic Con. So
you don't get a better friend than that.
I tell you what, anyone who brings me a pork pie is a friend for life.
It's a ledge. Yeah, brilliant.
Just either a flan or a quiche next, don't you?
I don't bring it out. No,
I think if you come up to your favourite small press creator and give them food at their table,
you're
winning.
I think the ultimate gift is probably like a hot drink, isn't it? A cup of tea.
Yeah, a cup of tea. Yeah,
finally.
Yeah, cup of tea, one sugar. I'm not suggesting anything, but if it happens, then...
You're always suggesting.
So be it.
Yeah.
There will be like little sandwich pods with tea and coffee at our place if anybody wants to... One up for Vince, poor old Vince. Always picked on every week.
Yeah, Vince, like a little bit of a rub down as well. Give him a bit of a bang.
I'll tell you what, Kev, you've gone up on my ladder of respect. Finally, someone's been acknowledged. Shut up, Dan.
I was contemplating how to say hello. It was like, do you do the Dan hello? Or do you do the Vince?
And Tony, mine was ill-considered. I
can't say what Tony would say.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I did the hello on the first episode and I've been locked into it now.
Dan, I'll you can change. But we're 118 weeks into this. You can change
just
it up.
People can listen to it for that. I can't let them down.
Yeah.
Are you happy with your introduction? Like, do you want me to change that?
I love it. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Tony, you don't get a choice.
I don't.
So, Kev, your work. Tom wants to know, in terms of your own work, What have you done that you've been the most proud of?
Probably the first comic that I did.
Interesting.
I think that's a good boring answer. No, that's not a boring answer. I think that's probably the best answer. If you think about Pride in general, it's always the first comic, the first thing that's printed or gone online that gives you that feeling of, oh my God, I've finally done it. I'm not just talking about it anymore.
Yeah,
it was one of those where it was the first book I actually had printed as well, because I'd been doing the comic strip online. And this was actually a story-driven sort of 40-page book. And I ordered sort of 50 of them, and I sold my last one about 2 months ago, which was, you know, five years of plugging that book has finally paid off. But yeah, that's probably the one I'm most proud of.
Is that the one that you probably took the longest over, even if you've done sort of sequential storytelling, like your longer form storytelling again? The first comic is probably the one that you spend longer on. Am I correct? Do you know what I mean? Because it's the first one. You overthink it, don't you, a little bit?
If you ask anyone who's read it, they'd say, no, you hardly spent any time on it. But yeah, it probably was. Yeah.
It's an interesting one, that one. We should ask creators what they think of their previous work.
It's weird, isn't it? I can't bear to stare at some of the early stuff I did, because I think, oh my God, what was I thinking about?
But but when you had that first comic like printed in your hands, Tony, how did you feel? Dirty?
There's a long story. I've told you this story before about the first comic I was ever in. I can't really name it because of the story, but they asked to provide a little bio in the back. You know, you get this in movies quite a lot, don't you? And I think I wrote something like, Tony Esmond is a famous spongophile. And for those who don't know, I think a spongophile is something invented by the Marquis de Sade while he was locked up, where you would cut open the body of someone and have sex with the steaming entrails as the person died. And I thought, I'll put that in for a laugh. Do you know what I mean? That always raises a laugh, doesn't it? You know.
And the head of the Beano said, you're never writing for a story.
And Rupert the Bear wrote back.
Me and, too.
That's why I've got these trousers.
When he said the Marquis de Sade, I was like, this is going to be good.
This is going to be bad. Anyway, it was between me and Ed Traquino. I did it with, who I'm seeing next week. I love Ed. He's such a good guy and really great artist. And I said, I'm going to put this in for a laugh. And he says, oh, they'll notice. Don't worry about it. Just put it in. They'll write back and ask you for a proper one. And it got through. And I'm like, person, it was a little bit pre-Google. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, okay, no, that's in the wild.
So occasionally it's sitting on the shelf. I can see it. I can see it like beaming back at me as if to say, you bastard. I can see it on the shelf across from me, and I'm thinking, oh, I shouldn't have done that, should I? But I'm such a wanker. Do you know what I mean? So I do stuff like that. But
They won't do this, and then they've done it, and you're like, fuck.
But the story was quite good. The story was about a character who kills a vaguely similar character to Jamie Oliver, who I cunningly called Jamie Bolivar.
I'll tell you what, you're a genius, Tony. You're an absolute genius. No one will ever guess that.
Thank you. Yeah, there'll be no legal lawsuit on that one. Yeah, and he gets his head caved in with someone with a hammer. So that was the sort of four-pager that I did. I'm quite proud of it. There you go. Nice. Thank you.
Dan, what about yours? How was your first printed book in your hands?
My first one was a comic book I did called Retake. And I'd formatted it completely wrong. I've done all the pages in A4 size, so kind of I wasn't really working from any template. I was like, oh, let's just make it A4, and it costs a lot more to get it printed. I only had about 3 or 4 printed, and that's sitting on my shelf. It's nice, you know what I mean?
You have 3 or 4 printed and you've still got one?
Yeah, I think I gave some away. Or yeah,
that's what I do.
You need to work on your sales technique, my son.
No, I didn't think I ever bought it to kind of, I started doing the webcomic thinking, right, I want to do my own comic, but I'm not really up to scratch yet. And that was a way of kind of getting my eye in. You know, like sometimes you have your first project and you can...
That's right. Quick convention, you're right. You're fine.
Yeah. So yeah, that's mine, kind of like, you know.
Cool. Vincenzo, what about you?
Oh, well...
You're Stalkerville.
No, because Stalkerville came afterwards. Like the web comics.
That was a MySpace thing, wasn't it?
That was a MySpace thing, which is kind of odd because it was just kind of happening. I was, I guess I was really pleased because I think that was the first piece of work that I was doing continually and was getting out there for people to read. But getting the first proof of the Red Mouse from Mars 1, that feeling is just... Actually, I do get a little... There's a I probably get that feeling every time I see a proof of a new issue or something. Like,
yeah.
Like when I see a proof of like our anthology, I'll probably blots myself. God knows what happened.
I am really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fantastic when it's done.
We'll talk more about that a bit later.
Vince has been posting up artwork.
It's great. Yeah. Fuck me, mate. You got a big jar of ink at your house, haven't you?
Yeah. I need more pens. I started and then it was like, oh no, I've been using this one for ages and the ink's running out. Right, next one.
He's saying, Joe, can you go to the shops for me? Yeah.
And then you hear,
fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe coming back like a kind of oil drum strapped to her back, being kind of staggering up the pathway, puffing and wheezing like something out of Beano.
Right. Oh, so speaking of the Beano, what does everyone think of? What was it? It's not Desperate Dan. I've forgotten it.
Dennis the Menace.
Dennis the Menace. I can't believe I blanked on Dennis the Menace. I was reading about this earlier. Obviously, there's a new look, Dennis, isn't there?
Is it?
Have you seen this? He just he's CGI.
I have to Google it now.
Yeah, they've CGI'd him and made him all 3D and stuff.
Yeah, they made him sort of trendy. And you know, Dennis the Menace for me. I mean, obviously, you're always going to get the grumpy old men going, "That's not my Dennis the Menace." If he acts like Dennis the Menace, he's Dennis the Menace, isn't he? I mean, for me,
is it a bit like that comic character that cartoon character that Homer created in The Simpsons? That was a cool dog. Who wore his baseball cap on backwards and said hip and trendy things. Is it going to be like that? It's like some 40-year-old bloke's idea of what a cool kid would be.
Yeah.
I mean, I see. Not too bad.
It's not too bad, but he has to act like an absolute bastard. Yeah. If he doesn't,
it always interests me how kind of where they take Dennis the Menace. Because obviously you can't condone bullying.
Yeah,
that's it, isn't it?
You can't condone him being slippered by his dad.
Yeah,
a lot of the elements have been taken out of Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, where are they going to take him? Soon it'll be.
Yeah, nice taking away all that child abuse is ruining our childhood.
Do you remember there's that character Faceache who could transform his face?
Yeah,
to different. Yeah, they did one in Viz because they often take the piss out of those characters. called Arseache. And the end panel, like when he ends up getting a slip and from his daddy's chains his ass into like rhinoceroses. Good old Viz.
You're right about that Dennis the Menace thing. Where do you go with it? Because
Dennis
is a character in American comics as well, isn't it? He's a sort of bit more of a sort of, he's not quite as street, is he? As not quite as dangerous. He's more of a sort of cheeky kid, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a cheeky scamp.
He's on the old guy next door, doesn't he?
Yeah. That's it.
Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. I don't know where you is.
Should we set about Dennis the Menace the same way we did War of the Rovers?
What? We can't have Dennis the Menace accused of rape.
Coming all over the tabloids. Yeah. Oh my God, Dennis, what's happened
Dennis
to you?
Dennis the Menace on an Aspo. Stuff like that.
Dennis the Menace crashes his car into snappy snaps. His face.
You could have an amazing sort of satirical comic of like a celebrity get me out of here, but would like Dennis the Menace and Roy the Rovers get those old
school classic characters.
And just put them in that sort of situation. Yeah,
just to age them and get them like really sort of, you know how like celebrity kids, you know, they're like in there when they get older, they just go completely off the rails, don't they? They're all on methamphetamine and fucking shoplifting and
Dennis,
stuff. You know?
Dennis, do you think Dennis the Menace would kick Charlie Brown's ass?
Oh my God, so easy.
Just stop whining, Charlie Brown. Whoosh.
Yeah. You're not going to kick that football. I'm going to kick you in the face.
Sets his dog on him.
She's going to pull the football away. She's going to
imagine
she's done it again.
Dennis would maybe go into like investment banking or something like that.
Yeah, he would be, wouldn't he? Yeah. He'd be one of those city wankers, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Desperate Dan would clearly have cholesterol problems, wouldn't he?
So ended up kicking a tramp to death on like South Bank, him and his mates after they'd been on a cocaine binge.
Child star falls from grace.
This takes me back to me and Walter. It's all stumping. It was weird, Walter, wasn't it? Walter with a softy.
That's it. Yeah. Well, it's weird, isn't it? When I was thinking about this today, when something we were chatting about earlier, bullying used to be having your face pushed down the toilet, didn't it? Now it's like just saying something, oh, you wear shit shoes on Twitter or something. Yeah.
That wasn't bullying either, was it?
No.
You know.
What, being pushed your face down the toilet?
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of
yes, it was.
Yeah. It's like joining the Masons. It's all, you know, rite of passage.
Making you stronger, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Remember they used to tie the shoelaces to the top of the toilet cistern and you used to have to hold your head out from the toilet, and as your arms gave way, your head went into the water and they flush it. That was what used to happen to me.
Jesus. No,
never happened to me.
Oh, okay. Well, I was boarding school when I had different
fair enough, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that was Brother Lawrence doing that. You know, it wasn't the other kids.
That's fucking Premier League bullying there.
Yeah. Well, Lawrence is an expert.
I tell you what, I've just watched the end of this show happen in front of my eyes.
No change from any other show, is it?
Yeah. That's true.
Tony's days in Borstal was like make scum look.
Yeah.
Like a kid's film.
Yeah.
It's like the Goonies.
Right, even Ray Winston refused to play me in the movie, and he'd fucking play anyone for money.
I'll tell you what, if there was Ray Winston's so cast as you, isn't he? He's got to be you in the film.
Oh, well, I thought Sid James was me. I'd rather bring Sid James back from the dead.
Let's reanimate Sid James. That's just what we need.
Oh, they can do things with computers now. You keep telling me that.
Yeah, they can't fix death yet. Oh, dear.
Good. So what have you got coming out this year, Nottingham?
Sorry, start again. Say again.
What have you got coming out this year at Nottingham? So what's the big releases?
Me personally or just...
Yeah, or just generally. Yeah, you and generally.
Now you've asked me a question. Well, mine is going to be Stuff and Stuff Anthology.
Yep, cool. Which
is just a load of comic strips and comic, like, four-page stories and stuff. That's good fun. We've also got, obviously, the NCC anthology.
Yeah.
Man alive.
You'd think Late Nights is launching, isn't it?
Yes, Late Nights, which I've read, and it's brilliant.
Really is. And any listeners to the show might be worth buying just to see if you can spot any references to the three of us on the last few pages.
We've also got Susie Gander's Periwinkle. That'll be
God, yes, so good. I forget because I read it so long ago, but it's that's a class act. Yeah, go and get that.
That's her debut appearance at a convention as well.
Yes, and Susie's also done a pin-up for Late Nights as well, so she's in both the big releases at the and non-event related releases at the convention. You know, yeah,
that's really touching, that comic.
It genuinely is. I'm a grumpy, hard-faced bastard most of the time, but it caught me out big time.
Yeah.
And you said the same, didn't you, Dan? I remember you saying it to her.
Totally. It caught me almost I'm not prepared at all.
Yeah.
It was very touching. It's kind of written with that kind of emotional honesty you can only get when you've been through something like that. And
exactly.
It just shines through on every page and in every word.
Yeah, it does.
It's really good stuff.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. And another book that's also money from it is going to a charity as well.
Mm. Yes.
Relating to cancer. Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Got Andy Blaw's Midnight Man 2.
Yes. Oh,
is that out? I didn't realise that was out then. Oh, great.
Yeah, he sent it off last week, I think he said. He told me, so.
Oh, great news.
It's nice to see Andy putting books out.
It really is. The first one. I love the first one. Yeah, crazy, the first one. Yeah, really good.
And apparently the second one's even crazier. So,
brilliant. Yeah.
I think, I don't know anything about the story as such, but I think he takes off in Big Ben like it's a spaceship at the beginning.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, there's going to be so much good stuff at Nottingham this year.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're hugely excited about it with all the panels and everything. Yeah. So, Kev, on the day, because obviously you'll be running around, will you need a hug at any point?
Every 5 minutes, I think.
Okay. you know where our table will be.
well, after this show, I don't think Chris Imber will be giving me a hug ever again. So that's that one out of the
Well,
He gives good hugs.
He's a yeah. face licker.
Yeah. He is a face licker. He licked your face.
Yeah.
I watched it.
Yeah.
Oh, which reminds me.
What?
Well, I saw, yeah. I saw him at ICE last month, and he took his portfolio to... the name escapes me. Guy that works on
Robin,
Batman and
Teenage Williams the Third.
Yeah.
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 I can't remember. Freddie Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the look on Chris's face afterwards, because I think the guy gave him such a beaming.
Yeah.
He did.
He essentially kind of said, you know, if this was me, I would hire you on the spot, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've got David Leitch coming, who does Psychogram.
Yes.
But he's also a editor for Titan. So Christian, but I know you're listening, just, you know, it might be worth
popping in and seeing him.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know why Titan should be putting his book out. Never mind, you know, hiring for something else. I think that's a great fit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Awesome. So cool. Yeah, so much to see and do at Nottingham, as well as us. But yeah, it's gonna be an awesome day. And that Kev's sticking around for the rest of the show. God bless him, because I tell you what, the show hasn't gone like this one in quite some time. We were getting to it
downhill so fast.
That's down to you, Brett.
Yeah. Brett the Hitman, right there. Do we have any shout-outs, gents?
No, the only one I've got is I'm going to be at New York Comic Con next week. So if you are going, please message me. I'd love to meet you if you're a listener. That'd be great. Or if you've got a new book drop in, whatever you're doing. And then post Nottingham, the last event, I think, of the year for us. I think you're doing it, Dan, aren't you? Is the 11th of November Wimbledon Comic Art Festival, which is at Wimbledon Library.
Yeah.
Me and Dave Brown are going to be there as well. Dave and I have... Dave just sent me 20 pages out of the blue. God bless Dave. He's like a machine. He's done... He and I are working on a comic. It's a bit secret at the moment, but he sent me the first 20 pages the other day, and it's flipping good. Really good.
Nice, yeah. It's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there with sharing a table with Ben Arrington, who's one of the writers of El Marvo. And I'll be,
oh, brilliant.
He'll Excellent. Be selling El Marvo on one side, and then Tony will be on the other side. So Real. It's fantastic.
Excellent. Yeah, really looking forward to that.
Come and buy comics. Good.
Yeah.
Just two minor shout-outs. Rachel Smith has launched her new Kickstarter for Wired Up Wrong. It's the deluxe version of her book, which I picked up at True Believers, I think I got.
Yeah, we both got a copy then. It's done about $2,000. I think it's about $7,000. Total, is it something like that?
I think it's six.
It's popped on Twitter, six, and it's, yeah. She's crushing it.
She is absolutely crushing it.
She's just amazing. Rachel is she's so humble about her own work and whatever. And we picked up her first book, the Wired one, and that's actually what got me to do the making of the Comic-Con book.
Oh, cool.
Oh, right.
Just, okay. It got me so inspired, and I loved the way she laid it out, and it's just like simple four panel square book. And I just thought, that's brilliant. So,
and it's also sort of autobiographical, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And so,
it's up to $3,000 of a $6,000 total.
Yeah, she's
and that's only
smash...
like 24 hours or something, is it? Or
yeah.
Even that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We will endeavour to probably talk to her at Nottingham, because she's going to be there.
Yep.
But yeah, it's just a great book. Anyone who's seen Wired Up Wrong, this is going to be the deluxe edition, so she's adding loads more content to it, I believe.
She's so definitely 100 extra pages.
So. 100 extra pages. Yeah. So sometimes when you get those extra sort of deluxe versions of books that you've already got, sometimes you're like, do I really want to get that again? Because they've only added, you know, they haven't really added too much apart from a hard cover. This one's actually going more bang for your buck. So definitely check out that. And also, as I said earlier, if you're going to BogCon, I'll be there signing a £20 a signature, and I'll be there with the cast of Primeval. So,
I bet you will.
And Tony's shoes, if anybody wants them.
I love the fact that I put out kind of out all kinds of comic art and stuff that I'm writing on, and the most popular thing I've ever put out is a picture of my shoe with £20 put on it.
Yeah.
Nice.
It could have been worse. It could have been like £5.
Yeah.
There's no fucking rhyme or reason to it, honestly.
No.
No. But let's get back on to talking about comics. Let's do some sexy recommendations. Who wants to go first this week? I'll tell you what. Should we have the guest go first this week?
Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
Kev, what do you want to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Everything on my bookshelf. This is the hardest decision. It's like, well, who? You know, I've got some great books by some great friends. The one that I did want to recommend, which I couldn't because it's no longer in print and his website's no longer there, is Drew Poser's Pokeweed. If you ever, ever get to see any of Drew's Pokeweed, it's just phenomenal stuff. It's hilarious. It's just a bunch of misfit characters. And one of them is a guy called Chuck, who's like this little Cthulhu who's gone vegetarian. And it's just, he's got a pet stone. Anyway, I can't recommend that because you can't get it anywhere. And like I say, the website's lapsed. So you have to chase Drew Poser for that one. So the first one is an American book by a guy called Jay Fosgit. And it's an all-ages book, surprise, surprise, called Bodhi Troll. And I'll read the back blurb, which sounds a bit like Tony, but ignore that. In the fairy tale village of Hogadorn lurks Bodhi Troll, a fuzzy little grump who wants to be big and scary, but is brutally cute and cuddly, and no one from his fairy godmother employer or barmaid best friend can change that. And honestly, it's hilarious. It's one of these books that, like I say, is written for or aimed at kids, but there's just so many adult jokes in there. And the artwork is the kind of stuff that I love. You know, it's very, very kind of Roger Langridge, that kind of style. But unfortunately, he's only got one book out at the minute. There's a second one coming out next year. But I would hugely, hugely recommend that one. Bodhi Troll. Cool. By Jay Fosgit, if I'm saying his name right. And the second one, I feel a bit bad in a way because it's one of our guests and I don't want to play favourites. But I picked it up 2 years ago, I think, at Archon, and it just had me in stitches and made me want to go and make loads of comics. And it's The Bizarre Adventures of Gilbert and Sullivan by Laura Howe. And it's done in a very kind of cutesy manga way, but Gilbert and Sullivan, the guys that write the operas and whatever, and they end up fighting giant eyeballs and robots and Oscar Wilde who drugs them all, and they all fancy him, and it's hilarious stuff. And again, not really for the kids. My daughter came up to me today asking what I was reading. It's like, you can't really look at this one. when you come to Nottingham, go see Laura at her table. I don't think she's got many of these left, but go grab one. The Bizarre Adventures of Gilbert and Sullivan. It's hilarious stuff.
Brill.
Awesome. Nice. All right, who wants to go next?
Shall I go next?
I'll go. You go.
Okay.
No, you go, Dan.
Yeah. I'm going to give a shout out to The Vision. Which Tony got me, the first book out of two. I'm going to read the blurb at the back because it does it better than I could have. Good. The Vision wants to be human, and what's more human than a family? So he heads back to the beginning, to the laboratory where Ultron created him and molded him into a weapon, the place where he first rebelled against his given destiny and imagined he could be more. There he builds a wife, Virginia, two teenage twins, Viv and Vin. They look like him, they have his powers, and they share his grandest ambition, or is that obsession? The unrelenting need to be ordinary. They're the family next door, and they have all the powers to kill us all. What could possibly go wrong? Artificial hearts will be broken, bodies will not stay buried, the truth will not remain hidden, and the vision will never be the same. This has kind of series got a lot of attention, and a lot of people talking about it, and rightly so. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones I heard a lot about, and I read it, and it lived up to my expectations, I put it that way, you know. Yeah, definitely.
Having this sort of unthinking, well, not unthinking, but kind of like almost emotionless machines trying to live out this kind of American family thing with the two kids going to high school, and then like an event happens, which I won't spoil, but then sends it completely spinning off.
And it's really well done. The story sort of foreshadows horrible things to come, and you're kind of wondering how it's going to get there.
You know? Yeah. and saying you sort of see characters kind of get put in moral dilemmas and them making choices on the spot, and you wonder where it's going to go. It's one of those axioms of always give your characters the hardest time possible, and that certainly happens in this. It's kind of like a kind of something goes wrong, and then they try and fix it, and then it gets worse and worse and worse, and you just wonder where it's going to go. And it's really interesting. I bought the second book, which how much was it, Tony? It was like 15
quid, wasn't it?
Yeah, 15 quid, and I think there's like 4 issues in it or something. Yeah. It's fucking so tiny. And
Marvel Trades is so expensive at the moment. Yeah. Where you bought it, I remember you reached down and picked it up, and then in front of you was a table of £7 Valiant Trades, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's round the corner, we'd been looking at some of the European ones, and there was one like not off the size of a fucking Yellow Pages, and that was 15 quid.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of... I want to read these comics, but you're
too
making
expensive.
It yeah, making it hard for me, because I can't justify that really. Not that I can't justify spending that money, but if you're going to ask me to spend money on comics, and there's one that's a few issues big, and one over there that's a massive, great big book, it's kind of a non-issue.
But, yeah, and if you were sort of a scurrilous teenager and someone who is more aware than me of how the internet works, I can see why people are tempted to download free comics. You know.
I think that's just got me thinking about my friend who picked up Death Note, you know, the manga.
Yeah.
3,400 pages, and he got it for 20 quid.
Yeah.
It's just bonkers.
They were selling that in the store as well for about that price, the whole thing. Yeah. And it's
was that what you were looking at, that?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the one you mean. Yeah. Okay.
And, it's just like, wow, this. Because that's great stuff as well, and to get it at that price, it's like I said, it's a bit of a non-issue. Well, it is an issue, but you spend your money how you like and get the comics that you like. But I couldn't wait to get the second book of this, and I look forward to starting on it.
Okay, cool.
So if you've got the money and you like good comics, check out Vision.
Or just watch Comixology or you might get it in a sale at some point.
Yeah.
What about you, Tony? What have you got this week?
I've got a cracker, mate. You know, you both know what I've got.
I bet you have.
Yeah, yes, I do.
I've got it ready for you.
I had to change this on. they sent over an enormous file.
Yes, it wouldn't load on my ancient iPad, so I had to fix it for me.
It was like a fucking gig.
Yeah. Right.
Gig PDF.
Let me just tease it to start with. So I'm going to use the words, tell us more about your gorgeous sticky. Okay, that's one of the lines in it. Now, as you know, we try not to talk about politics on this show. It's something, it's sort of polarising, isn't it? And it's something that no one will agree with your particular opinion, so we try not to. And I was worried about this book, about talking about it, because it does cover a political thing. I'm a great believer in don't talk, do, in relation to sort of helping people. And I think talking about politics doesn't always do that, you know, it just causes problems. So I was worried about doing it. But I read it, and it is... it is probably the most goddamned insulting book I think I've ever read. however, it attacks literally everyone. It attacks everyone on every single side of every single fence you can possibly think of. Mm. You know, this, like their previous book, was clearly discussed whilst holed up in a prison, a category A prison somewhere in the States. And they made up the story whilst sort of chuckling with each other. So what I'm talking about is by the boys who brought us Man vs. Rock is Unpresidential, which is written by Kevin Bieber and Victor Reynolds, and art by Jeremy Labib. It's 175 pages in full colour, and it's basically about the life of Kim Jong-un. So the boys didn't let me down at all. It is fearlessly and shamelessly goes after everyone. And it just highlights the world of the stupid people of the world, especially Americans, to be fair, of which they are, so I'm sure they know what they're talking about. It's chocked full of sight gags. Here's an example. Someone is wearing a Nancy Reagan astrology camp baseball cap, for example. A sign that reads, "War Factory, free cookie with every bombing." A sign on the side of a computer machine that says, "Gender neutral Pac-Man." And it's just, that's just one page. I've got to, there's that many jokes on every page, you know? So the story, what happens in it? So conveniently, all the politicians get killed in some way or other. A number of them get killed after they order a bear, and an actual Russian bear appears and kills them. So Kim Jong-un steps in as the new candidate. He tells his story of how he came to be, and apparently George Washington moved to Pyongyang in 1983. You know, George Washington, the historical American president. George Washington had sex with a bald eagle and gave birth to Kim. That is probably a good example of how mental this book is. He teams up with Zelda Goldstein after reading her book, which is entitled Why the Human Penis Will Go Extinct. And he followed her work on the charitable organization Pinterest Without Borders. And he basically begins to gather a group of people who are going to help him. They're going to be a sort of campaign team. While he's chatting to Kim, she's busy writing Gawker Feed's top 10 farting kittens article. So he thinks she's perfect. And he blackmails her into joining his campaign. So obviously then they advertise on Craigslist for some other people, and he asks for only men powerful from the waist down need apply. And then he gets some help from a group called MILF, which stands for Mothers in Love with Firearms. So he's sort of desperate for celebrity endorsements, and he sort of chases that for a while. And he begins to gain ground. But he then becomes sort of quite worried that his opponents will start attacking him, because they'll see how brilliant and great he is, because he obviously considers himself to be brilliant and great. And it backfires when someone puts a video out of Kim at his birthday party when nobody had turned up when he was a kid. And he says, like, that's what everyone hates. Nobody likes an unpopular person. So it sort of takes off from there. It takes a turn towards the end, which I'll go to in a minute. But Kim decides to start fundraising because he runs out of money, and he sets up a comic convention called BribeCon 2017, because God loves bribes. and then he goes onto Twitter, and it goes a bit of a weird way towards the end. It takes on a personality. There's a thing about a Twitter account, which I won't ruin for everyone, but it goes in the direction of Trump, which I didn't enjoy quite as much as I enjoyed the first sort of three quarters of it. I won't ruin what the ending is, because I think you should read it, and it is absolutely brilliant fun. It's totally casually insulting. Like, they just insult people constantly without a thought or word about it, and it's not remotely professional looking in any way, which I kind of love about their books. But it's actually fair, because it does attack everyone in the world. I would say if you wrote this, you would probably have to be the child of someone who hasn't slept for about 14 years and they're just been kept awake on a combination of methamphetamine and LSD. It's also sort of a total antidote for the reactionary keyboard warriors of the internet age, if you get me. And he does play on that. But it is panel by panel just fucking laugh out loud funny.
Yeah,
it's also, as with Man versus Rocket, it's dangerous. You know, there are people who would read this and go, what the fuck, what kind of weirdo are you reading this, which I kind of love about it. It's got a sort of subversive element to it. It's anarchic, trippy, off at the races, a few drips short of a piss, radio rental. That's some of the things I've written on this page. And because of that, I really, really enjoy this sort of stuff. It looks at moments like it's just some whacked out cartoon from the 90s music video. There's some great quotes, a couple of them. Sadder than an American athlete at a paternity test center. That's how he feels at one point. He says, I can't read that one out, it's too rude. He wants to sexually molest our guns, someone shouts at him at one point.
It's weird, because when it's at Pat Mills' conversation, someone brought up about the fact that the person in question didn't think there was anyone producing like the kind of comics that Pat did. You don't have to look much further than the guys making Man v Rock for their kind of output. It's like, fuck, you know, this is the raw, edgy stuff. It's really... I only read the first few pages, I was converting, I was like, I've got to save this for later, because it's fucking brutal.
It looks
the introduction
like...
page.
Yeah, there's. I was going to start this by reading the introduction page, but I think it's a bit long. But it's It starts off, "Dear corn-fed James Franco loving Americans. When I was a child, all I wanted was two things: a coupon for 20% off anything at Bed Bath and Beyond, and to be a member of a special club. For years, all everyone talked about was my United Nations sanctions hearings and how badass W looked in his pilot's outfit. You know, it's like just it's like a diary of Kim Jong-un. But everyone around him, he's almost the best. You look at it and you think, yeah, he'd probably be a better president than all these people around him. You know, it's fucking crazy, crazy, crazy. And it looks like, to me, it looks like the best 1960s, early 1970s underground comic, I suppose, is where it sits art-wise and attitude-wise. You know, it's anarchy on a page, I suppose, is the best way of describing it. The boys sent me a review copy. God bless them. They sent me a review copy. And I, as you know, in the last few weeks, we've been inundated on the run-up to Thought Bubble with just reviews, and I just did not get around to it. And then they sent me an email. They're fuckers, they really are. They sent me an email that says, "We've spoken to our publicity department, and they've asked if you could... We've given this specially to you to review, and we're fine. We're totally fine with you reviewing it early, pre-release." Oh, you're a bunch of fuckers. You really are. You've got a publicity department. I met you. You're just two blokes who sort of giggle a lot and take the piss. Which I admire more than the biggest, you know, the biggest company producing comics, is the fact that these two guys just do it without, and they just write what they think is funny. And like, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, you don't write down to people, you just write what you think is funny. And that's why comics like Viz, and that's why this comic work, you know, is it's just remorselessly piss-taking and insulting, but it's done with that, it's so satirical, there's satire on every single page, and you think, yeah, I see what you're saying. And as a sort of, you know, say they dig up America in 1,000 years, and they dig this up, they'll think, well, there is a lot of truth in what was going on back then in the pages of this comic, but this just turned up to fucking 500, you know. It's available on Amazon. If you go to www.manvsrock.com, follow the guys, Man versus Rock, on Twitter. I've arranged to go and see them. They're at the same table. I hope they haven't got the same neighbours in New York, because I think they had a sort of cute kitty comic stall next to them. And I was talking to them, and they sort of had to turn their back and go, "Well, people behind us don't talk like that," you know. I'm hoping to see them, and hoping to get a bit of audio off them. But it's one of our favourite shows, I think, certainly from the early days of the pod, wasn't it?
Yeah,
when
it's crazy.
Yeah, nuts. Yeah, so that's
fine. Since then, you've been rubbish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, Unpresidential from the Man versus Rock team. Great stuff. There you go. It's my one.
Splendid. Now, my one this week, I finally got all the print issues of a comic that I've raved about twice on the show. I think Tony's also talked about it as well. And I managed to catch up on issues 3 and 4 of this title. Now, issue 3, the best way to say it is, issue 3 has on its cover saying, 24 pages of full-coloured, good old-fashioned, cannibalistic, face-ripping, head-crushing fun. And, yes. It's the Beano for the new generation, and it is Todd Oliver's Boxes. This is absolutely phenomenal stuff. It's seriously one of my favourite titles that I read. So to finally get my hands on like the new issue, which has only just come out, printed in September. So, the best way to describe this is so high. There's no story. This is a sketch show in comic book format. So if you're a fan of the Monty Python, Reeves and Mortimer, you know, anything by Graham Linehan, you know, your Father Ted's, your IT Crowds, all of that.
There's a bit of the boosh about it as well, isn't there? There's like animated sections. Yeah.
This is for you. It is hilarious. It is surreal. It is dark. It is twisted. And it is amazing. Have you seen the new issue yet, Tony?
I don't think I've seen the new one. No, I haven't. I've got a bit of art from him in front of me. He does like these little sort of small... smaller than A5 sketches, which are just gorgeous. But yeah, no, yeah. I've seen the new one. I must get it.
Yeah, we did a bit of an issue swap, and I got this in a post with some cards along with the book. He also puts out cards that are very much like the garbage pail kids, the boxed buddies, which is amazing. Which he signs those cards. They're brilliant in itself. But how can you explain this book? Now, there's one-page shorts, there's four-page shorts, there's reoccurring characters, including one of our favourites, the Accidental Cannibal,
who
in issue three comes across a meat pie. The concept of that character is so simple. It's like the nicest guy in the world. He just seems to accidentally eat human beings. And there's a good, what is it? I think it's like five pages. So it's a bit of a, there's a sequential story working up to the joke in this one. And it's just amazing. But a guy that works in a meat pie making factory. And it's so grim and amazing at the same time. There's in issue three, there's what's his name? A Doctor O'Doctor, who's a professional doctor, who has like a giant ball for a head and a tiny face. you can tell he's a doctor because he's got a certificate of shoulder on his wall, and his way of solving things is ripping his face off and and giving it to people. It's so when I was reading it, I was like, "What the hell is going on? This is amazing." It is laugh out loud funny. It's sometimes disturbing. In one of the issues, he does a strange Twilight Zone type story, which is the nostalgia store. And what I love about Todd's work is it's full coloured and the colours work perfectly. But he also, there's the little details that are in the background, I think, and the little details he puts into it. Like there's one sort of story, as it will. Well, it's like an advert for a new type of meat, which is Palkan, which is the meat that has it all. It's 3.8% pig, 2% cow, 4% chicken, and 100% delicious. And it's available in a handy pre-sliced pack as meatballs, perfect with spaghetti, and the meatballs have like eyes and beaks in them, and even as a bubble gum. And there's a kid blowing a bubble that, I'm sorry, looks just like a bollock. And it signs off that little sketch with a sort of symbol of like the little Pyman's, who's the company who make this awful product. And it says, the little pieman seal of approval. It's quite good. That's all it says on it. But my favourite is...
I wish we got a sign of approval like that.
Yeah, I know. But in issue four, which introduces probably my favourite character, Angry Eric, who's just this little fella who just hates everything, which I think he'd be a perfect guest for this show, to be honest.
Yeah.
And he writes a blog and it's Don't Iron Anything.
Yeah. Oi.
No, I tell you what, you would relate with this guy, Tony. But
would I?
Yeah. He's eating a bit of cake at the beginning and it starts raining.
Sounds cool already.
And he says, he just gets angry for no reason. And his wife, who is a giant... By the way, I think actually Angry Eric is tiny because he only comes up to a knee and you never see his wife's face. She goes, "What is it, Eric?" And he's like, "Fucking rain, water, it ruins everything." And that's exactly how just when he starts to calm down, he crosses a bridge and thinks, "This is quite a nice view." And then there's a guy drowning in the river. And basically, Angry Eric said, "It's all water's fault. Fuck water." He just gets really pissed off. He doesn't help anybody. And there are just so many good characters. And issue four has a bit of swearing in it, but I don't.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's got a brilliant advert, like the nostalgia store story, which is quite dark and trippy. That's the Twilight Zone one, which is in issue four.
Yeah, he's quite a dark guy, isn't he? It's definitely not the Beano, is it? Do you know what I mean? It's got a sort of...
Yeah, there's a wonderful sort of satire that's very, like, you know, almost a little bit sort of Brass Eye-like, and the day-to-day has got that biting satire. Like, the guy, just before he steps into Nostalgia Store, you see this wonderful sort of perspective street of a modern sort of shopping street. And just around the corner, there's an advert for a new energy drink called Mega Energy. And it just has in big words, "Fuck sleep." Oh, dear. No, it's so good, though. Boxes is definitely one of my favourite titles. And Todd's, you know, he's a great bloke, as we know. And seriously, if you see him at a show, I mean, the actual project aside, the quality of it, of the printing and the actual the books themselves. So high quality. He's putting out 24-page full colour like comedy sketch show sort of books. You know, it's quite an unusual sort of thing to do. I mean, and he's putting them out quite. But like this is issue 3 and 4 came out this year. I think did he do issue 2 earlier in the year?
I'm not sure.
He's not hanging about with them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's high quality and good value for money. And yeah, boxes. Look for it because it's just awesome. And I'm ready. I know I will get exactly what I want from every issue, which is a good hearty chuckle and probably nightmares. Yeah. So, if you want to follow Todd, you can follow him on Twitter at Todd Oliver. He's also on Love Todd on Instagram, where he'll have links for his Big Cartel and stuff, where you can get hold of the books, etc. So, thank you very much, Todd. It was absolutely amazing reading those. I just and they're a nice quick read, but I've gone back to reread them several times. That's what I love. That's what I love about.
And we got him on. We had him on. We did a. I did a quick interview with him at LCAP.
LCAP, wasn't it? Yeah,
a couple of months ago. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah.
If play, it won't be long before he's on the show proper. I imagine. Right.
Yeah.
And not just because he thanks us in the inside cover.
Yeah, I was sending you a picture of it, didn't I, as well? Do we get that in 4 as well, do we?
Yeah, we get that in 4.
So. Oh, nice. Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on any time.
So there you go. That was a... some fantastic books to check out there. Thank you
very
much.
Controversial episode.
It's controversial on so many levels, but the only thing that wasn't controversial was the mighty Kev Brett, who's been a marvellous guest.
I dare you to post this on the Roy the Rover's Facebook page.
Yeah. I'm dubious as to whether to post it on the Nottingham Comic Con page.
We'll have the entire Roy the Rovers fan base after us, all 5 of them.
Yeah. Oh, damn. All 80 now, so nobody cares.
Yeah, you better watch yourself with that kind of talk.
Didn't you say John Freeman was a big fan?
Yeah. I think he is.
John will be pissed when he hears this in 6 months.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
And if you're John Freeman and you want to write into the show...
Yeah, if you do, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us. John, please email us. AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com. Likewise, folks, if you've got any events or you know any new comic projects that we need to know about, you can also email tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be posting up who the new next guests are. We've got an exciting guest coming up. And next week's show, Tony won't be here.
I might
phone in. Oh my word! Well, that's something to look forward to, because he'll be in New York. But yeah, follow the Twitter because you never know what's going to turn up. Now that both Tony and Dan have the keys to the car, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/. Stop following people like that, Tony. Otherwise, do you know what? I'm going to just change the password. I know I threatened it last week.
Every week I try and find someone out. So last week it was Geordie Shaw. Who will it be this week, listeners? There you go.
Oh, God. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And join
Ryden. Is it Ryland? Ryland's cool, isn't it?
Do you know what? You're going the right way about getting kicked off all the admins for everything we do.
Jim Davidson or something on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Loose women.
Oh. Jesus. But if you actually want to talk some comics instead of this nonsense I have to listen to on a weekly basis, then you can join the group Awesome Comics Talk, which I have to say, Tony asked just to get a little bit of feedback on what you people think of the show and what you like to
do. We're talking about this earlier. I genuinely asked. Me and Dan have been talking about what shows we like to do when we had a beer on Friday. And I was thinking, I wonder what the show's people could do. It's hard to gauge from sort of figures or what people like, isn't it? Because everyone's sort of enthusiastic about everything. But so I thought I'd ask, and I genuinely wasn't sort of fishing for compliments.
No.
But everyone came up with some really nice comments, a lot of good suggestions as well of stuff to do and what they like and stuff. So more of that coming, I think.
Thank you very much, everyone who gets involved on that. You know, just in general on that group, anyone who gets involved, we've seen some great conversations on there, fascinating stuff. So, and there'll
Can
be
I
more.
Throw my 2p worth in there.
Sure.
There's no disrespect to anybody else that's been on the show. More fool you for being on the show, but the talks with the guests are great. But my favourite ones have to be when it's just you three.
Oh, really? Thank you, man.
Fuck cheers. Off, yeah, then, Kev. Fuck off.
Yeah. I'll see you in 2 weeks, my friend.
Yeah. We're going to... Right, Alan Moore is cancelled for next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Al.
Yeah. Al.
No, he's an avid listener.
Yeah.
How did you find him? Did you just email him?
Yeah, he's fine about it. He don't mind. Yeah. Right. I contacted him through his ghostly toilet. Doesn't there a snake that lives in his toilet or something? I just contacted him through that.
Oh, God. Yes. Thank you for saying such nice things about us, folks. And to you, Kev. Yeah. Thank you. That's very, very
thanks,
kind.
Kev. Cheers,
we really appreciate it. Also, on the Twitter as well, because it was International Podcast Day.
Oh, yeah, wasn't
this
it?
Past weekend. Yeah. So thank you to
just
everyone.
Nice shout-outs.
We've got some lovely shout-outs, so thank you very much. We do watch. We're always watching.
Watching, waiting.
God.
Yeah. Do you know what? We were talking about some horrible stuff earlier in this show, so if they're still listening, they don't give a fuck what I say now, do they?
That's true.
But if you are still
Dennis the Menace selling his arse on the streets.
Yeah, Royal Rovers.
There
is
goes my attendance at Nottingham Comic Con.
Nottingham Comic Con is in no way affiliated with.
Yeah,
with,
yeah, I'm taking that logo off my partner's page. I'm quick.
No, it's going to be a great show, though. And
my highlight of the year is going to Nottingham. I absolutely love going to it. Always have a proper laugh. The day just disappears as well.
Yeah,
it goes so quickly. Yeah, really looking forward to it.
So, where can people find us all online, etc.? Tony.
Ezohyz. And please sign up to our mailer. Me and the mighty Mr. Prolix do a mailer every week. If you follow us on Twitter, find it, and it's tinymail.com/cockneykungfu. There's a script going. I'm going to put a script out this week, which is something that I submitted to somebody. They asked for a script from me, and then they never rang me back. I get that a lot of women. I didn't expect it off comic creators, but so I've put that up there just for sort of just talking how I write scripts and stuff like that. And it's just a bit of fun. So there you go. Have a look at that.
That's nice. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice. He's a pro.
I've got myself on that Instagram as well. If you search on there, I'll pop up there.
Yeah.
Blimey. You've gone mainstream.
Trying to get a few more punters.
Yeah.
A few more punters.
Like Dennis the Menace.
Hashtag STD. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Kev, thank you again for joining us. Where can people find you online?
It's been brilliant, mate.
And where can people find out everything about Nottingham Comic Con this year?
Website is nottinghamcomiccon.co.uk, and we're on Twitter at Nottingham Comic, and we're at various other places that you can find from there. So.
Nice.
Real.
So,
great event. Really good fun.
Yeah. Did you say
your Twitter handle then?
Did you say your own Twitter handle? You didn't, did you? Did he?
Oh, mine. Mine's Kev_Brett.
There you go. Follow the man. Nice one. And check out his awesome work.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, and does some great comics as well. Yeah, real fun stuff. Even when he has to work with me.
Yeah. Makes you look good, Tony.
You have to look out for the awesome comic podcast references in the Nottingham Comic Con anthology.
There you go.
Oh, God. Is it libelous?
Yeah, obviously.
My personal take on Vince is that makes me laugh.
Yes, very sexy.
In a good way, Vince, yeah.
I'm quite scared.
To buy the anthology and find out.
Yeah. Pay your money.
And so check out the show in a couple of weeks. And thank you for checking out this show this week.
Yeah.
It's been another fun one. So join us next week for more madness. But until then, read loads of comics. Just make comics, because I know a lot of you do out there. And we're seeing some amazing stuff. So, stay fruity, stay safe. Yeah. And as always, from us lovely people here who are probably going to get sued in the next week, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
walking there, sometimes I thought, right, the last going to come. Nope. And then other times, this wasn't expecting like a jump scare in a movie. And it was like,
and every time he laughed, you look back. That was making me laugh more. Every time he laughed, you just look back and went, ugh, like this to me.
Yeah. I'm just going to go next door and put on some shorts because this fucking room is like an oven.
Oh, yes. Okay, go on, Dan.
So picture that.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh. Dan's on one. Oh, no. Are you colouring in? Are you colouring in using a felt tip? What's that noise?
Hang on.
Are you brass rubbing?
Hang on. Oh.
What the fuck is that noise? Honestly, if you're masturbating, I'll go to see a doctor. I've got to tell you, that fucking... There's some kind of friction burn going on. Oh, no.
Well, you know, if he's going to talk like that, I'm going to do it.
Yo.
Oh, Dan. Oh!
We had fake wanking from Vince there for the whole time you were gone. He wouldn't stop. The noise just went on and on. I felt quite uncomfortable.
We do fake with the inverted fingers.
Yeah, I'm doing that. Fingers.
I bet you are.